Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson and to the recap of the UAE Tour Stage 5 from Fujairah Marine Club to Jebel Jais, the summit finish, 1,489 metres in altitude. This stage was called the Impossible is Possible stage. I would caution any race organisers for using such language in the context of professional cycling racing, but nonetheless, we didn't really have anything close to impossible performances today. But before we get into that, I want to mention our show partner for the whole year, Lecol, www.lecol.cc. They produce performance cycling apparel. I've been telling you for a couple of days now to go and check out their website, their new high visibility reflective jacket. Maybe Benji, there's been demand, Benji, for me and you to wear the high-vis reflective jackets in our recordings. I think that would just not work well with the green screen set up behind me. It would throw out our software. That's maybe a good way of trialing the Lecol high-vis reflective jacket. Maybe that's the performance component of it if two at-home podcasters can wear them successfully. But they work very well out on the road. They've got the data to prove that. So go and check them out at the link below. On to stage five, Bendy. As I mentioned, Jebel Jais climb. Pretty simple stage, 169 kilometers long, flat with two intermediate sprints before the climb. The climb is then 21.5 k's at 5.5%. Very consistent gradient, highway climb, big ring climb, draft bit really important. Yates 40 seconds behind Pogačar on GC. Almeida a minute back. Always a tough task. How did today shape up?
Okay, so we thought that it would go similar to Jebel Hafid in the sense that the break would not be super large, that the stage would not really go to the breakaway because, well, usually we have a very controllable race if you have a flat terrain before the final climb, and then the final climb is just one climb. So in this situation, we were expecting that, but it turned a tiny bit differently than we usually expect to because we had a bit of a large group. At first, Matthias Frank decided to attack for Agisert Citroën. Then we saw that Nizzolo was trying to join, which was a bit surprising, but I thought perhaps for the intermediate sprint points, he would try and gain some or something. And eventually a larger group formed. Nizzolo fell back to the peloton, not on the ground, but as in he dropped back to the peloton. Pretty important focus on the details there. And eventually the first intermediate sprint was won by Frank, and Dekker sprinted to second place there. Then eventually that larger breakaway was going towards that second intermediate on which it was literally just before the final climb. And we saw the only person that would care for the prize money of all these intermediate sprints in that breakaway, most likely, being Thomas again to go for it once again. Like, he's the rider that wants to go for every single intermediate sprint, every climb, every jersey that he can achieve because he wants to add that to his collection of what he has achieved in cycling. So that's pretty cool, to be honest. But all in all, I think we all kind of knew that the breakaway wasn't looking too bright when they hit the bottom of the climb at a solid 2.5 to 3 minutes. And in the peloton, the pace wasn't that high. We saw that Ineos all day was trying to keep the gap relatively close to try and win the stage with Yates, I would expect, or set something up with Adam Yates. That was what we were expecting because Adam Yates needs to attack. But the thing is, the breakaway eventually started speeding up again the moment they started hitting the climb because they've got the likes of Alex Zausset, who at the start was setting up a nice pace, but obviously wasn't going to be the all-deciding factor because Goldstein, his teammate, Israelian champion, can actually climb. Zausset a bit less, quite a bit less actually. And, well, Thomas de Gendt was also the better climber of Lotto Soudal up there. We had Colioni, who held on for quite a while but had to drop back at a certain point. And we also saw Lutsenko in that breakaway. So those were the three strongest riders, Goldstein, De Gendt, and Lutsenko. Those were the riders that were fighting for whatever was possible in that breakaway as the peloton was coming closer under the guard of Ineos. The last thing we saw from that breakaway was the fact that Lutsenko actually dropped the other two and was hitting pretty highly. And for a rider that we were saying a few days ago that we weren't seeing anything from this season compared to the other seasons where his initial start of the season is always great, today was a good ride from him. And I'd say props to him, and I hope that it's a bit of a reflection of the future of this year for him because, well, he's a nice rider to to follow. And I think he's definitely a rider that can win stage and ground tours. He's done it before, so he can definitely do it again. But all in all, let's go to the peloton. Ineos pacing, Sosa being the first rider at the front, or like one of the riders at the front for Ineos there. But it didn't go as planned, I think, right?
Well, yeah, they reversed the order today of Sosa and Rivera. Martinez was still going to be last man for Adam Yates. Adam Yates wasn't actually in the Ineos train. He was parked up on Tadej Pogačar's wheel. And you could just tell the pace was not very fast from Ineos almost the entirety of the climb. For starters, the group was massive for a lot of the climb. Secondly, as I mentioned, the draft benefited on a climb such as this, where there's an easy stage beforehand. No climbs to soften people up. Apparently, there's a light headwind, according to Tadej Pogačar in the interviews afterwards. And it's on a big highway, bigger incline. They're going 27, 30 k's an hour. And Sosa was no good. Once again, his pull was not supposed to be for 2 minutes or 90 seconds. And it was about that. And he got spat once again. It's just, maybe it's a heat thing, Benji. I don't know. Because Provence was freezing, right? And Lutsenko was supposed to be a favourite for that Chalet Renard stage. Did well there last year and was terrible. We thought, oh, he's off form because he had COVID. And then Sosa wins that stage in a blistering pace. Come to UAE, reverse the temperatures. But still, Lutsenko lost like 10 minutes on Jebel Hafid. And I thought, oh, his form's not good. And it's just classical Alexei Lutsenko. Maybe he got dropped on Hafid, wasn't having a good day, and thought, well, better to lose 10 minutes than 2 minutes, because then I can go in the breakaway on Jebel Jais. And he rode really, really strong today, Lutsenko. It reminded me a lot, Benji, of Montagual Stage 5 of the Tour de France last year. Ineos soft pacing, pretend pace for Bernal. And the question I want to ask you, Benji, is, okay, so was the plan to actually drive a hard pace and shred the group and set up Yates, and the fact that Sosa couldn't pull and Rivera had to do a double pull at lower watts meant that couldn't happen? Or was the plan to ride defensively to maintain Yates second on GC, or to keep the group together and deliver Yates for a stage win with Martinez pulling in the last 1,500 metres like Kuss would do for Roglic? Because last year when they rode Agual soft pace, that was to protect Bernal, who wasn't having a good day. What was the plan for Ineos today? Because I'm feeling it seemed pretty purposeless to me. I couldn't gather what their plan was.
Yeah, I think that throughout the stage, it was clear that they were trying to keep the breakaway at a certain margin. They weren't trying to catch them immediately once they hit the climb, but they were trying to lower the gap to that breakaway by quite a bit. I don't think they expected to have the breakaway last as long as it did. Spoilers, it got caught. But the thing about it is, I don't necessarily think that they were thinking to try and launch an attack by Yates. I don't think this climb really allowed that to happen. We spoke about it multiple times. This is not the climb where you can attack with 7K to go and go alone. That is not how it's going to work on Jebel Yais, and we saw that today. I think that Sosa dropping back early, like genuinely, every morning at Ineos, I bet they throw a dice in. Whatever it lands on is the form that Sosa has that day. It's so inconsistent, it's crazy. But in this situation, Sosa did not really do that much. And it wasn't even at a high pace at that point. Martinez being the last man, Rivera holding on for a very long time. But obviously, Rivera's not the best climber in that squad and does will not influence, for example, a Formolo. I don't think Rivera's going to make Formolo suffer, stuff like that. And when Martinez hit the front, the tempo went up, people started dropping. But the thing about it is you can't...
Oh, well, but it wasn't Martinez hitting the front. Rivera, that's what I don't get, Benji. They weren't catching Lutsenko. If they were just leaving, Martinez was staying there, second wheel, and they just left Rivera there indefinitely, it seemed. And the gap to Lutsenko, who was going quite well, was at a minute. It had stayed, it went from a minute 20 down to about a minute, but then it just stayed there because Rivera was tired. Zweihoff, the Bora Hansgrohe, was third wheel, and I was thinking, damn, if Bora want this stage win for Buchmann or Zweihoff, I mean, I don't think Ineos are faking. They better try something soon. And then with 5Ks to go, or 4.5, Zweihoff attacked, the mountain bike rider Bora just signed. Martinez then closed to him. Why do you think Martinez closed to Zvejhof? Was Martinez going for stage win? Was he trying to keep it together for Yates stage win? Because again, even that is a little bit confusing to me.
I think it was trying to be the second thing. And we noticed that when that attack by Bora started happening, that Martinez went to him. But the thing is, I think it was still Bjerg for UAE. I'm not sure it was. Was it Polange already? I don't think so. I'm actually not very sure. But they weren't catching Martinez directly. They were like, sure, if Martinez wants to go, then he can go. Because Martinez is obviously not a danger for Pogacar. UAE rider was suffering a tiny bit, so he was potentially trying to catch on. But it wasn't desperate to try and catch Martinez because, well, if Martinez decides to ride faster and nobody else is going to take the wheel of Martinez there, then why should UAE do it? So interesting strategy there as well. I don't think that UAE should react to someone as a domestique for Ineos who closes down a gap to that Bora rider per se. And I think they did that perfectly. And it all kind of fell apart for Ineos the moment that happened because, like you mentioned, Martinez was not taking full control of the front of that group. And we saw other attacks happening suddenly. And it was an attack that I was very, very, very happy about. Vincenzo Nibali on the left side of the road, a monstrous attack, fast everybody. The shark bit, and it was a pretty good bite for a bit. I was kind of surprised it held that long, yeah. But it was also because nobody reacted. Like,
it was good timing.
Not a single soul. Yeah, perfect timing. Not a single soul reacted until like a good 2 minutes further where Han van Hooke decided to launch a bit of an attack to that, and then everybody started attacking left and right, I think. We saw a jumbo rider attack because as well through the middle, and then he saw it wasn't going to work. Everybody reacted to that. Yates was trying to follow the wheel. I think Yates made a bit of a mistake the moment that, I don't know who attacked, but there was an attack at a certain point where Yates was drinking from his bottle. And
point, Almeida. Pogacar had Almeida. React.
Yeah, the Almeida attack. And Yates was drinking and was like, throws the bottle and had to like hurry to get back on the wheel of the jumbo riders behind Pogacar.
Yeah, he got on coach,
which is not the perfect place to be. But yeah, Almeida attacked, and you can tell the story further, to be honest.
Well, yeah, so the shenanigans from 4.5 when Zvejhof attacked to 3Ks after maybe Nibali got caught, that put about 30 seconds into the gap. And so now we're at 3Ks left, 30 seconds, 27 seconds to Lutsenko, who was, you know, battling a 21.5K climb on his own all day. And a lot of fresh climbers behind him. They've been sitting in a big draft, not doing massive watts, I don't think, big watts, but not as hard as a feat, that's for sure. And so Almeida then went past the Nibali Van Hooke group, and there was a moto shot from the side so quickly. It looked like they were doing, it looked like one of them were junior gear restricted. Almeida, massive attack at 2.8Ks, marked by Pogacar because he had to. And then obviously Pogacar had to be marked by Yates, and then everyone followed. And a lot of riders were still fresh. Then I think that brought us to Almeida setting pace again, no one really helping him, Egita trying to bridge across to those guys, then Egita trying to follow an attack from maybe an Ajdouf Citroën rider, but that's not really going anywhere. And then I think 1,800 meters, maybe less than that to go, Benji. Yates never attacked, did he? I'm trying to think, Yates never attacked? No, it was two, no. Then it was two Jumbo-Visma riders, Benji's got me confused, attacking on either side of the road. And because it's a highway, it's like 25 meters from each other laterally. And then they looked and like, oh, no. And it was Jonas Vingegaard. He attacked on the left-hand side of the road as he's looking at it. And Lutsenko's slowing down badly at this point. He's really suffering. It said 11 seconds on the graphics, but visually you could see it was about 5 seconds. And Vingegaard, he closed the gap to Lutsenko, pretty much ignored Lutsenko, Benji. He like just went past him, didn't attack him as he went past, just started pacing for him. He knew he can't play cat and mouse with a 5-second lead on Pogacar, Yates, Egita. Egita was the one that was really trying to close them down, and Almeida. Almeida attacked again, trying to get across to those guys, to Vingegaard, sorry. Almeida was pulling. He had Pogacar, Yates, Egita, Kuss, Wout Poels and co on his wheel. Sorry, Wout Poels had also tried to bridge across earlier, but then had to drop back. And then Vingegaard, the camera, unfortunately, we've got 500 meters to go. He's with Lutsenko. Lutsenko's gone onto his wheel. The camera's then stayed, the fixed camera, on the down the road as they've passed, and we don't know what's happening. Eventually, they cut back to them at 225 meters or so, and Vingegaard has just attacked Lutsenko, who cannot respond at all, and takes the big W, able to post up with plenty of time. His second pro win, he won a stage in Tour de Pologne in 2019. Yes. I believe that, I think that was, what sort of parkour? That was not a mountaintop finish, but no. there was a very, very hilly stage.
And Sivakov, you know, I think.
Sivakov, Hindley, Higuita fourth that day as well. So rounding up for second was Tadej Pogacar. He won the bunch sprint ahead of Yates and Higuita. Higuita fourth today. Almeida fifth. Nick Schultz sixth. Lovely result for him. Kuh seventh. Poles eighth. Hermans ninth. Bouchard tenth. But yeah, do you think who missed out today, Benji? Who really will be going to the team bus today thinking, wow, that was a stage I really should have won, and if I just had an extra teammate or a bit of help or attacked at this time, I could have been winning today?
It's kind of difficult to say, because I think that everybody in that second group kind of missed out, because at a certain point in the last 2 kilometers, they just pretty much stopped pacing for a bit, until Almeida was the guy that was like, come on, dudes, and started sprinting behind who was ever in front. And yeah, it's not going to work like that. And if they then finish on 3 seconds, then they're missing out. The thing is, how much are they missing out? Who's missing out? I think Higuita spent his energy a bit too much before the final section, but he can't really do much else because he doesn't have the support in that area to do something. Nils Paulus was there, but Nils Paulus, that's a new name. But Nelson Paulus was there. Yeah. Okay. Not a good joke. The thing is, he's going to try and protect his position in GC. He's not going to fully offer himself up for Higuita. And that shows today, because Higuita missed one teammate to try and bring down the gap towards Vingegaard again in the end. And otherwise, I think that Higuita might have been ahead of Pogacar and Yates, because Higuita was the second person to react just after Almeida did, and Yates and Pogacar just freewheeled in the wheel and waited until Higuita was basically done with his early sprint. And yeah, basically Higuita had to do an Ackermann today. That's kind of what I'm trying to say. But at the end of the stage, and I think that that's what makes this not pay off. But I want to use my editorial power to link us back to the preview podcast we had of the UAE Tour, where I think one of us mentioned that Vingegaard could be someone to kind of see happening on this stage.
I thought you were going to say something like Vingegaard, because...
Vingegaard, seriously. Yeah, Vingegaard is quality too, but maybe not this good if Pogacar and Co are there, but... Yep, that's Benji using his editorial power through me. I'm having to download that and put that in. But yeah, Benji called it. He said, if you didn't hear, he said he wrote down Vingegaard for this stage. And I didn't think it was a crazy pick at all. And I've got to say, he's not like a random rider, Jonas Vingegaard. No. Like, if you watch the Vuelta last year, he came 14th on Angliru, and he was at least the second strongest domestique in the mountains for Roglic in the Vuelta last year. Very, very strong, very consistent at the Vuelta. He's now got 2 World Tour level stage wins, and if you can't pick him out with a K to look at his face on the live feed, then you've got some work to do. He looks like Macaulay Culkin if he'd pursued a path of athletic prowess instead of some other lifestyle choices. So it's a pretty easy rider to pick out, and he looks nothing like Chris Harper, who, you know, has got a bit of a hunchback and a bit of 5 o'clock shadow. So, yeah, shame that they didn't call out Vingegaard properly on the English broadcast, but the Danish broadcast was certainly G'd up, I'm told, by the Danish fans of the podcast. And yeah, what do you think about Vingegaard for the Jumbo-Visma? I think he should go to the Tour, Benji. I think he's earned that through his Vuelta performance last year.
I think one of the races that I like to see him do is Tirreno. And the annoying part is that Wout van Aert is leader there, so it's difficult to send Vingegaard to that race.
Not anymore, apparently.
No, not anymore?
Well, his trainer said he's overweight, so he's not really. It's not realistic to go for GC at Torino, but maybe he's talking nonsense.
Yeah, but talking about like this whole situation, you've got plenty of riders that bring up the issue of all the stuff about weight and so forth, and then it feels like a bit stupid from a trainer to call it out in public in the fucking newspaper. Like, what?
Yeah.
I find that so stupid.
And that's just not us picking it. A couple of riders messaged me and said, if my trainer said that, I'd be throwing hands with them. So, yeah, I thought that was super weird, especially in light of the Dumoulin news not 2 weeks before that, that they're giving article, you know, quotes in the press like that. Very, very strange. But I think Vingegaard should go to the Tour. And certainly 1 week race Tour of Swiss, Benji, maybe. See how he goes there. But yeah, he's a really, really solid rider. He's only, I think, 24 years old. I think Tadej Pogačar in the quotes you read about today's stage, just rounding off today's stage, Aguilar are maybe the big losers. I think if they'd have someone like Kuss or to set pace for them, I think they'd certainly be probably much closer to the stage win. Pogačar, if he said he didn't care about the stage win, so I was wrong in yesterday's pod. When I was like, it's all about Pogačar, but he said in the quotes afterwards, just protecting GC today. Didn't care about stage win. He still beat Yates and Aguilar in the kick to the line. So I think if it had come down to a kick, he might have won as well. Just crazy all-around rider. In terms of GC, no changes at all, really, except for Caruso moving up to seventh. Damiano, he loves it. But GC's pretty much wrapped up, unless there's some crosswind madness in the next few stages. Next stage, sort of prefacing that, is from Dubai to Palm Jumeirah. 165Ks, two intermediate sprints. It's on the cycle track. I think Al Quadra cycle track, a fair bit of this stage. And it's going to be another sprint. And I think, Bennett, Ewan as well, favourites again. And Ackerman, he's got to launch with less than 200 metres to go, and maybe he could win as well. He's definitely got the power. But Benji, I want to ask you a question. A, going back to our comments in the preview of the UAE Tour about the climbs being the wrong way around, do you actually think it would have made a difference to the race if this climb had been first and Hafid second? Because I got to say, if Lutsenko nearly won, and it was probably one of the most boring climbs I'd ever watched raced up until the last 3 or 4 kilometres when Bora got sick of it, do you think there would have been more action if it had been first, or it would have been the same and everyone would have waited for Hafid?
But it's not necessarily the action that's the issue for me. It's a problem that we now had a UAE Tour where we knew basically at the end of the third stage already that the GC was decided, and otherwise that would have been after stage 5, which is a difference. The same like having a Tour de France where you choose to have the last week all flat stages, and then you decide to make the most exciting stuff in the first week. Then you know the last week who won the fucking Tour. So yeah, that's my problem with it. I find that the issue at hand, that it reduces the intensity of the GC towards the end of the race. And perhaps it also kind of changed how the race was ridden. I don't think it would have perhaps made Jebel Hafid more interesting. I think it might have had UAE ride a bit less defensively on Jebel Yais, though, if it was the other way around.
I think if it's the other way around, I think Pogačar maybe a little bit more aggressive, and that would have caused a little bit more carnage with using Micro and Co. But I think the real problem was, and this is not the fault of the UAE Tour organizers, they can't control this. The real problem was Sosa and the Ineos train. Ineos to do damage today, I mean, A, it was a headwind. That's out of everyone's control, and that's going to nullify setting really hard pace and putting people in difficulty because drafts are more important. But Ineos would have needed Dennis, Port, Martinez on form. Like, they would have needed all the big guns. Because this is not actually a climb for Sosa to set pace. Dennis is the perfect rider, as we saw on Stelvio, for a stage or a climb like this to really shred it. It's not about doing a hard 90-second pull either. You need riders, because it's a 45-minute climb, to do like 10, 12 minutes super hard And especially with the headwind, they got to be doing such big watts to actually put other riders into difficulty. And the group was very, very big until attacks came. But heartbreak for Alexei Lutsenko. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Benji. Sorry.
No, heartbreak for Lutsenko. But the thing that I take away from the stage in total is the most important thing of the stage is that we now know that Vincenzo Nibali is going to win a stage in the Giro. He just has to. Like, did you see that attack? Come on.
No, he won't.
Also, Joao descend stage. I feel it.
His timing, his racecraft and timing, that'll never leave him. His timing is impeccable. Yeah. And, you know, he got that gap and it was perfect. And he got such a good gap because everyone was looking at each other. Just great timing. But, yeah, the watts were never usually there in a preseason race. So I think it's actually good to see him attacking regardless. My last question for you, Benji, is, why isn't there a night race around Dubai, a night criterium? Instead of a 200K flat stage, why not a 65K night criterium around Dubai? I think that would look sick.
I think it would look sick, but I know that if I was riding in the dark, it'd be less safe, and I think that's one of the reasons why they don't.
They drive Formula One cars in the dark, don't they?
Yes, but...
Yeah, with lights, obviously, true, not like proper dark.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. And they also did that Velta stage a few years ago where they started in the evening and it also was really? Pretty dark in that either a sprint stage or a team time trial, one of the two where they launched when it was getting dark and you saw the lights everywhere. Yeah, so some kind of Velta stage, don't know which one. But you're right, it exists.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty interesting thing. I'd like to see that. I'd watch that. And I think if the stage was 65 instead of 200 in a pancake flat sprint pre-season race, I don't think it would change the result.
I know why.
Too much. Why?
I think if it's too dark, you can't see if someone's super tucking in the race, and that's why the UCI doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, I guess people complain about safety, but I think it'd be really interesting, and also it'd be good for selling the rights because it'll be a little bit later in the day. And you'd be in the Europe, you'd be European late afternoon, and America might have time to wake up as well. So that's an option for next year. UAE tour, if you want any consulting work or help from me and Benji, we're pretty available. We've got nothing else to do except talk nonsense on the podcast. But that's all from us today. Great win from Jonas Vingegaard. Heartbreak for Lutsenko, and no change on GC. We'll see what happens in the sprint. I think it's a sprint tomorrow. Ciao.